Spring Early by Scott Geisel. Christine Everhart just wanted to be left alone. She leaned forward and pedaled harder into the cold Ohio wind. No one asking how she'd been, what she'd been up to, how she likes being home again. Will she be staying for the holidays? Just 10 minutes to herself would do some good. 10 minutes without the questions, without the memories. The ancient Swin 3-speed shuddered into potholes and over curbs, and the cold bit into Christine's cheeks and settled in her feet and hands. How had she ever done this as a child and thought nothing of it? Had Ohio really always been this cold? She left for college and warmer climates right after high school, took the bus down to Florida with a boy she started dating her senior year. They fell more deeply in love, settled in Jacksonville, and liked it. The warmth, the beach, a city big enough to get lost in. Nothing like here. Christine loved her family, and so had Mike, and they'd carefully arranged trips for their parents to visit them in Jacksonville. In 15 years, Christine had only been home twice. Once for Mike's funeral, and now because of her grandmother's stroke. Spending Christmas at home was so far proving more challenging than she'd expected. When Christine rounded the corner from Walnut onto Elm and saw the bright orange cones lining the street in front of the school, she knew she'd made a mistake. Last day before Christmas break, and they were getting out early, just like when she'd gone to school at Shady Elm Elementary. A few kids trickled out the doors into the early afternoon sun, and then a flood of color and motion erupted. Coats, hats, arms, legs, and book bags fluttering and churning through the schoolyard toward the crosswalk. Christine dodged another pothole and tried to force the rusted shift lever down into first gear. The chain stuttered and popped off the sprocket, and she felt the pedals slip beneath her feet as she skittered to a stop in front of the crosswalk, where the sea of children swallowed her up. This was the opposite of alone. Christine looked down to examine the damage, and a hand reached through the chatter and giggles to her shoulder. "Do you need some help?" the voice offered. She looked up at Officer McLean. How could he still be on the force? He was old when he'd been manning the school crossing when she was a child. "No," Christine said, but she waited until the children had crossed and let him walk the bike with her to the curb. Officer McLean bent to examine the damage. "All rusted up," he said. "I don't know how you were riding this thing." "Didn't shift," Christine said. He pulled a Swiss Army knife from his pocket, extracted the screwdriver blade, and wedged the chain loose from the gears on the back tire. "This might get you home," he said, "but I wouldn't go on any cross-country trips." "I'm headed to Creighton's," she said. Officer McLean raised an eyebrow. "You don't already have one. You ought to pick up a can of oil while you're there." Christine thanked him and pushed off down the street. How could she escape her past when it was still alive? All around her, a breathing mass of history. Creighton's Hardware looked like it always had. Small and cramped with narrow aisles, but an amazing array and variety of tools, hardware and supplies, all arranged so that at least one of each item was visible on a shelf. There were still the pots and pans and kitchen utensils, coffee makers and pressure cookers, and the basement with plumbing supplies, which was ironic because the basement flooded every time there was even a modest rain. And just as Christine had expected, the front window was once again packed full with Christmas decorations, lights, miniature trees, wrapping paper, and gift items. It was ablaze with the holiday. She took her time picking out one set of white lights and one of blue from the window display, looking through the other items as she did to make mental notes for later. She still hadn't found a gift for her parents. Usually it was a mail-order item, fruit of the month club, something nice for the house, or an item they'd picked out themselves. But with Grandma's stroke and the phone calls and distractions and last-minute travel plans, she hadn't gotten to it yet this year. And with Christmas just a few days away, there wasn't time to have a package sent. When she turned the corner into the row of electronic supplies, there was something new. John Houston, standing with an elderly woman and explaining how a three-way light bulb worked. He was wearing a red cretonne apron around his waist. John smiled when he saw Christine, but didn't turn his attention from the woman until she had gone. "Christine," he said, coming from behind the register toward her. "Long time." His hair was darker than she remembered and a little thinner at the temples, but he was the same guy she remembered from high school. Thin, big ears, and the best smile she'd ever seen. They had dated before she went with Mike. John had talked about college, but dragged his feet. Christine had just wanted to get out. "Finding everything?" John asked. "Extension cord," Christine said. He stepped around her and picked one up from the shelf. "What length?" "Green," she said. "It has to be green." He put the cord back and walked down the aisle. "Those are all up front with the Christmas lights." She followed him, and he reached deep into the display case in the window. "6 feet okay?" "Fine," she said, and he handed one to her. "I heard you were in town," he said, "and I'm sorry to hear about your grandma." Christine flinched. "Geez, does everybody know everything around here? Everywhere I go, it's like people are expecting me. Everyone knows I'm home. Mom's made the rounds. At the post office, at the bank, I can't buy a banana without someone asking me how I've been or how's grandma." John shrugged. "Just like always." "So how is she?" Christine let out a breath. "The same." The stroke hit her right side, and that was her dominant arm. "So she's having a hard time adjusting." John nodded. "She's at home?" Christine shook her head. "Out of the hospital, but staying with Mother and Dad. She can't be on her own." "I wish her a speedy recovery," John said, then looked thoughtful for a moment. "So, no spring earlies this year?" Christine looked up at him. "Did you say spring early?" "I did. You know they're called springerly, right?" she said, drawing out the spring and the and the lee. John laughed. "I've called them that since I was a kid. Your grandmother always sent some cookies to my grandmother, and I always got a few. These past few years, she's been sending them to my mother. I still get some. No one else makes spring earlies like your grandmother." Christine examined the extension cord and lights in her hand. It was true. She still got a box mailed to her every year. They were perfect. A thin, crunchy layer on the outside and a soft, cakey inside that was so strong with anise, the whole house was filled with the scent the day they arrived in the mail. "Oh, sorry," John said, "selfish of me. The important thing is your grandma's health." "No, Gram made them early. She said she knew something was going to happen and she baked them in October, right before the stroke. We have a whole pantry full. They're spilling out everywhere. That ought to make her happy." Christine stood silently. She supposed it did. "Okay. Anything else?" John asked. "Oil," she said. "I need a can of oil." He started off across the store. "What kind?" "For my bike chain. It jammed on the way over here." He picked out a small can and took it to the register, and when he had rung everything up and was putting her things into a bag, he held up the can of oil and asked, "You want me to help you with this? Put some on now?" She looked at him, puzzled. "The bike is outside." "Why does everyone keep trying to help me? Do I look like I need help?" John dropped the can into the paper bag and folded the top over. "Sorry," he said, holding up his hands. "That's twice today. I can't afford another one." "No," Christine said, shaking her head. "It's me. It's just, look, I'd love some help. It's in the rack out front." When he got outside and saw the bike, John laughed. "How old is this thing?" "Old as me," Christine said, already feeling the sting of the cold again on her skin. He wasn't even wearing a coat. John oiled the chain, the derailleur, the cables, the shifter, and then the chain again, wiping the excess with a rag he'd brought from inside. "It's going to need brake pads and air in the tires if you want to keep riding it," he said. Christine pulled her hat down tight, took the can from John, and placed it into the rusted wire basket along with the other items. "I'll do that," she said, putting her mittens on. But before she left, she turned again to John. "There's just one thing I don't understand." "Hmm?" "Why are you working at a hardware store?" John frowned. "Why are you still here?" she pressed. "You were so smart. You were going to go away. What happened? The frown got deeper. I'm working here because Mr. Creighton is a family friend. He needs the help. Christmas is actually a very busy time for him, and he's getting older. Plus, he needs help organizing for the end-of-the-year inventory count. He stuck his hands in his pockets and turned half away from her, speaking now over his shoulder. I teach chemistry at Oakdale. Yes, I know. We said we'd never go to a community college, but there's good work to be done here, just the same as anywhere else, you know. Christine closed her eyes. No, I... But she heard the bell on the door tinkle, and John was already back inside. The warmth from the kitchen engulfed Christine as she stepped through the door into her parents' house. Did you get the lights? Mom called from the living room. Yes. Bring them in here. Her mother had the couch pulled away from the big window and was hanging ornaments from hooks that were stuck to the glass with little suction cups. With Grandma in the wheelchair, there hadn't been room for a tree this year. Christine recognized many of the items already hanging, but there were several she'd never seen before. There was a bird made out of painted walnut shells and cardboard, a bell made from pipe cleaners and paper snowflakes that were yellowed and falling apart. There were also some very nice things. Little crystal balls, a carved wooden Santa, an angel made of lace. Where did these come from? Christine asked, leaning over the back of the couch. She touched one of the paper snowflakes, and it danced fragilely under her fingertip. Mom put an arm on her shoulder. You like 'em? These were on our tree when I was a kid. She pointed to the walnut bird. I made that in second grade. Then she turned the lumpy pipe cleaner bell on its hook. And your Uncle Dave, rest his soul, made this 2 years later in the same class, in the very same seat where I sat. Your grandmother always liked that. Christine looked at her mother and noticed for the first time since she'd been home these past few days the gray in her hair that she couldn't completely hide anymore, and a thinness in her fingers she didn't remember. Mom didn't look old, but she no longer looked young. Why haven't I seen them before? Christine asked. They were in your grandma's attic, Mom said. She asked your dad to bring them down. Christine must have looked confused, because Mom added, When you were young, we hung the things you made in school. They're still here. She pointed to the origami bird, the construction paper Santa. Then she reached for the lights Christine had brought. Did you see John at Creighton's? You knew that he was working there? John's been working there at Christmas for years, since Mr. Creighton fell and broke his ankle hanging the display in the window. He starts as soon as the semester is over. She stretched a string of lights tentatively. You know he teaches at Oakdale. He told me, yes. It's a good job. They seem to like him there, and his mother told me they were going to. Mom, Christine said, rolling her eyes. What? She worked at a kink in the line of lights. Let's just get these up before Grandma wakes up. They fussed with the lights and the ornaments for a while. Christine's mother was unusually quiet, and that put Christine in a quiet mood, too. When they were both satisfied, Mom went off to the kitchen, and when she refused help getting dinner ready, Christine went to the basement to check in on her work before dinner. She'd fallen into graphic design in college and built up a steady list of clients after she and Mike both graduated together. At first, it had been practical. He worked a good job with benefits, and she had the flexibility to stay home and grow her business. After the accident, the work became her savior. The insurance money had allowed her to keep the house, but it was the distraction of deadlines and responsibilities that had kept her going. And modern technology had afforded her the solitude she'd grown more and more to need. She logged on to email, found a reply from a client who wanted changes to a design, and worked on them until it was time to eat. Christine came upstairs to the smell of fresh baked bread and the sound of Grandma maneuvering herself in the wheelchair with her one good leg. Mom was in the living room adjusting the footrest on the chair. Christine went in and kissed Grandma on the cheek, then, before she realized what she was doing, did the same for her mother. I'll set the table, she offered. As she turned, she noticed the darkness outside and in the room, and turned toward the light switch. "Land sakes," Mom said, "I completely forgot." She turned Grandma to face the window, and Christine flicked the colored lights on. The room came aglow with reflections of twinkling memories. Grandma squealed, as much as she could with one side of her face still hampered from the stroke. "Janet," she gurgled, looking at Mom, "you found them." "They were right where you said," Mom patted Grandma's shoulder. And while they admired the window, Christine slipped into the kitchen and began arranging plates and silverware. She didn't like seeing her grandma struggle. The recovery seemed too slow. A moment later, Mom pushed Grandma in and nudged her as close to the table as possible, then locked the chair's wheels. "Call your father," she said. And Christine went to the back door and flicked the outside lights, the same signal she'd used since she was a child. Dad appeared from the garage, and Christine saw the blanket of white beginning to fall as he made his way to the house. He stamped his feet on the landing. "Starting to pick up out there," he said. "No sense shoveling until morning." He looked at the front window. "That really looks nice, Ma," he said. And they all sat down to eat. Meals had been especially difficult for Grandma since the stroke, and tonight was worse than usual. Even with her food cut into small pieces, swallowing was often difficult. Dad twice had to get up and gently pound Grandma on the back to clear her throat, and the exertion was clearly tiring for her. Christine watched patiently, wishing there were more she could do. When the table had been cleared, Christine poured coffee and brought out a tin of Springerlees from the pantry. Grandma reached out with her good arm and picked one off the top. "Grandma," Christine said, "where did the Springerlee recipe come from?" Grandma's eyes lit up. "My great, 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 great grandma." She drew a breath. "And probably back farther than that." She wiped the corner of her mouth and swallowed hard. "They came over from the old country." Grandma reached for her coffee. Christine had made her decaf, and Mom helped her take a sip. "You remember my sister Berta and Ruthie and Mary?" Christine nodded, and Grandma struggled to clear her throat and get the words out. "Our mothers made them, the old way. They bought bus tickets, and we rode to each other's houses. One family would buy the eggs, another one bought the sugar, and another the anise oil and flour." Grandma stopped as they all waited for her to find her place again. "It took 2 days. The boys beat the eggs. They handed the bowl down, from oldest to youngest. When their arms got tired, they'd start again from the top." Grandma paused, and Christine found herself bending forward, listening. "The men, my father, finished when they got home. Then we made the moles and let them dry overnight. In the morning, we'd ride the bus again and do the baking. It was..." Grandma choked, and they all leaned in toward her. "It was glorious," Grandma stammered. "Glorious." There was a sparkle in Grandma's eye that Christine hadn't seen for a long time, and she wanted to be that little girl, riding the bus and making the Springerlees. "I want you to teach me," she said. Mom looked at her. "Us," Christine said. "Maybe. Do you want to?" she started, looking at her mother. But Mom was already shaking her head yes. Grandma beamed and made a writing motion with her left hand. "Paper," she said. "You'll need a shopping list." The snow was shin deep in the morning and still falling. Dad grabbed a sweatshirt and work gloves and went out to shovel. Christine put on thermals, jeans, an extra pair of socks, coat and scarf, a hat, and heavy gloves, then followed him. It took about 2 minutes of shoveling for her to realize she was overdressed. Dad laughed as she tugged at the scarf and pulled her hat off. "You used to do this without a coat, and your mother would yell at you." Dad pointed to the window. "She's there now." Christine waved at Mom and lowered the zipper on the front of her coat. "You'll get me in trouble yet," Dad said, and tossed snow at her. She laughed and tossed a shovelful back. By the time they'd cleaned up that mess and cleared the driveway, Breakfast had turned into brunch, and the snow was still falling, already turning everything white again. As soon as they'd finished eating, Christine put on her coat and hat. Dad looked at her. "Might as well wait a while. Doesn't look like it's going to stop yet."
"No," Christine said. "I'm going to walk to town and get the things for the Springerlees."
"Why don't you take the car?" Mom offered. "A mile will seem like a long way in the snow."
Christine shook her head. "You know I don't want to drive, especially in the snow." She had already emptied her laptop carry case and had it slung over her shoulder. When she rounded the house, the lights in the front window flashed on. She smiled and plunged into the deep snow at the curb. A few people were just beginning to clear the sidewalks. Walking through the one or two sets of tire tracks carved into the street seemed the best way to travel, and not a single car appeared on the roads until she was almost to the two-lane county road that ran through the center of the town. It was like a party downtown. The Emporium was crowded with people buying coffee. There was an army of kids shoveling the sidewalks in front of the stores. The Boy Scouts were selling wreaths at a table in front of the cinema, and the bookmobile was parked at the curb in front of Rogers Market. Nobody seemed to mind the cold or the piles of snow they had to step over and through just to move about. Christine waded through the market, down the narrow aisles, slick with slushy footprints, and found everything she'd need for the Springerlees, except one item. She smiled vaguely at the thought of where she'd have to get it, and carefully packed everything into her bag, then treated herself to a cup of coffee before her last stop. While she was at the Emporium, she poured a second cup, then headed across the street to Creighton's. The library was holding a bake sale in the already crowded hardware store, and then Christine remembered. This building had been the site of the town's first library. And every year on the anniversary of its opening, there was a bake sale here, and, she turned to look out the window, a book sale in the bookmobile. She'd begged Mom to bring her here every Saturday before Christmas. Christine bought brownies, a couple of cupcakes, and a bag full of cookies, and stuffed them all into her bag. She was almost out the door when she remembered what she'd come for, and why she'd been juggling a second cup of coffee. John was ringing up an order, and she inconspicuously set the coffee and a brownie next to him by the register and kept going. When she came back with a set of metal measuring spoons, the place was temporarily quiet, and he was unwrapping the brownie and looking at her. "To say I'm sorry," she said, "for yesterday." "I know," John said. "It's just been a while." "Right. We had some catching up to do." John leaned onto the counter. "When was the last time you were home?" Christine saw that he immediately recognized the answer and wished he hadn't asked. "The funeral," she said, surprised to hear the words come out. "Mike's family wanted him to be buried here." John held up a hand. "I didn't mean to pry." Christine was silent for a moment. "I didn't see you there." John frowned, sighed, set down his brownie, and got a serious look on his face. "Look, you know it broke my heart when he died. I know you really loved him. You two loved each other. That's what made it so hard. How could I pay my respects to that? I would have just gotten in the way." Christine's knees felt soft. "You know, I was driving when it happened." "I heard that," John said, "and I also heard it was the other driver's fault." "Everyone kept telling me that," she said. "But it never felt okay."
The door jangled then, and two young boys ran in and excitedly asked John if they could sweep the walk out front or shovel the curb. He asked if they had their own shovels, and they shook their heads yes and ran back out to work. He turned back to Christine and picked up the measuring spoons. "You can't tell me your mother doesn't already have a set of these." "It's for the anise oil," she said. "It eats through plastic." He looked quizzical. "But your grandmother already made the spring earlies." Christine felt a flush of warmth. "I'm going to learn."
She glanced toward the front window display. And I'm still looking for the perfect gift for Mom and Dad, too. Do you think I might find something here? John rang up the sail and tucked the spoons into Christine's bag for her. They don't need anything else, he said coyly. Making the Springerlees took all the rest of that day. Grandma was in the middle of everything, pushing herself around in the wheelchair with her one good leg, sticking her nose into the bowls and checking on everything. Mom and Christine laughed and made a mess, and Dad finished the shoveling once the snow had stopped, then fell asleep in front of the TV. When it was time to roll the dough, Grandma instructed Mom to get down her rolling pin, and she got very serious. You know, Grandma said to Christine, your grandfather carved this rolling pin himself. Christine looked at the pattern of simple shapes, holly berries, an evergreen, a rudimentary dove. They were indelibly etched in her childhood memories. I always stuck some in the back of the freezer for him. For his birthday, he loved those cookies, and he never could figure out how I had them fresh in the spring. Christine rolled the pin carefully and watched the shapes emerge in the dough. By the time they'd cut them all apart, laid them out to dry overnight, and eaten dinner and cleaned everything up, Grandma was already long asleep. As Christine was heading down to the basement for the night, she turned to her mother. Mom, do you know if John Houston ever married? Mom kissed Christine on the cheek. Never, she whispered, and slipped away. Christine logged onto email to check her work before she turned in, paused, and searched for the Oakdale College Chemistry Department's webpage. The next morning, they baked. The Springerlees bloomed perfectly, just like they were supposed to, with the little shapes embossed on the tops. Grandma made sure they were wrapped and sealed tightly. We didn't have those plastic bags, she said. If you didn't get a tin of cookies sealed tight, they'd be hard as rocks when you got back to them. She also made sure that the first batch she'd made stayed separate from this new bunch. You know, she said, they're no good for at least 3 weeks. If you eat them before that, the flavor won't go through. She oversaw the whole operation. Mom told Grandma that she was wearing herself out and should slow down. But Grandma wouldn't have any of that. This might be my last Christmas, she said. You're going to let an old lady have her due, won't you? When the last of the cookies were sealed up, Christine called from the pantry. There's no room! Springerlees were spilling out from the shelves, falling onto Christine as fast as she tried to restack them. Grandma, she said, you've got to deliver these. Don't you always give a bunch away? Grandma started. Of course! She lurched forward in her wheelchair. We've got to get going! Christine picked up the phone. Where do we start? The Dickinsons, Grandma called. 76552 now. Hold on a minute, Mom said. Just who's going to be doing the delivering? Both of us, Christine said, looking at Grandma. I don't think your grandmother is up to that, Mom said, and the weather. I'm going, Grandma said. Get my coat. I don't think. Let her go, Ma, Dad called from his easy chair in the living room. Better yet, you should all go. All the women. Mom didn't look convinced. I'll clean the car off and bring it around to the side door, Dad said. The wheelchair folds up. We can put it in the trunk. Any trouble, you call me from the cell, and I'll be there with the truck before you can blink. Things went abuzz. Mom helped bundle up Grandma, Christine copied a list of names that Grandma recited, and Dad was outside warming up the car. When they had Grandma safely in the front seat, Mom slid into the back and handed Christine the keys. Christine didn't take them. It's time you got over this, Mom said. You won't get over 20 miles an hour. Christine turned to Dad. Doesn't get much safer than this, he said. And she took the keys and slid in behind the wheel. She drove overly cautious, but it came back to her right away. Driving in the snow, braking before the turn, keeping the wheels straight, rolling stops when there was no one else coming. Mom handled the phone, calling ahead when they could get an answer, but they made their stops regardless of whether someone was home or not. They went to everyone Grandma could think of, childhood friends who were still alive, or their kids, the senior citizen center, Reverend Martin at the church, Cheryl at the bank, anyone who had ever shown interest in or eaten Grandma Springerly's got some. The street lights were coming on as they made their way home, trying to think of anyone they may have missed. As they edged past the cemetery, Christine looked over in the dim light. It was the first time she'd seen this place since they'd had the service for Mike. He hadn't gotten away any more than she had. And when they pulled into the driveway and she saw the front window all lit up, it came to Christine who they'd forgotten. She'd have to make one more trip to the hardware store tomorrow. Grandma was already awake and at the kitchen table in her wheelchair when Christine came up for coffee in the morning. Mom was in the back of the house somewhere, and Dad was nowhere in sight. Christine filled her mug and sat down next to Grandma. Grandma patted Christine's hand. "Eat some on the 31st, she said. Christine cocked her head. "March 31st, your grandfather's birthday." Christine got up and took a bag of Springerlees from the pantry, wrapped it inside a sandwich bag, and stuck it all the way in the back of the freezer while Grandma watched. "He always liked it when spring came early," Grandma said. "If I'm not here, you remember." "I will," Christine promised. Mom came in and they had a light breakfast. Then Christine rolled the Schwinn out of the garage and pushed it down the driveway. Smatterings of snow and patches of rough ice glistened on the black pavement. Riding the bike probably wasn't the best idea, but she was going to do it anyway. It would keep her closer to things. She was dressed in layers now, a windbreaker over her winter coat, scarf loose around her neck, her old hiking boots dug out from the back of her closet to keep her feet warm. She was learning to adjust. She checked her pockets, looked back once at the house, then slowly pedaled out into the cleanest tracks through the snow in the street. The gears groaned when she tried to shift, but the chain slipped down into first, and she felt a solidness in the pedal. Everything was quiet and bright in the sunlight reflecting off the white snow. The tires squeaked through the frozen ruts, and Christine rode carefully, turning her face from the wind when she could to keep her eyes from watering. She took her time, and when she reached the school, it was beautifully quiet and pristine. The snow rolled in billowy drifts over the yard. Not a footprint disturbed the scene, and Christine stopped at the curb and looked down along the line of the second-grade wing. Her mother may have forgotten, but Christine had been in Mrs. Kleckner's class, too, at the end of her teaching career, and they had also made Christmas ornaments. And then another thought came back to her. That was the classroom where she'd first met John. The past kept threading itself into the future, here more than anywhere. She pedaled through the streets downtown and out toward the cemetery. When she got to the gates, there was a wide open expanse of white in front of her. Another untouched landscape. Though it had been nearly 5 years since she'd been here and the snow was deep, Christine knew the way. Mike's grave was on the main path under the wide oak where his family plot lay. She pushed her way there and cleared a spot in front of the headstone. "For you, Mike," she said, sitting on the granite and pulling out a Springerlee. She took a bite and savored it as long as she could before it melted away. "You always like these," she said, scanning the dips and rolls in the snowdrifts. She took another bite and breathed in the scent. She finished her Springerlee, then carefully resealed the bag and tucked it back into her pocket. "I hope you don't mind," she said, but there's an old friend I have to go see. She paused, sniffed deeply, and drew the cold air down into her lungs, then let it out. You know him, and you know we dated before you and I got together. That's especially important now. I think you'll understand. Christine waited quietly, hoping for an answer, but knowing it wouldn't come that easily. Then she got up to walk back down to her bike and made her way to the hardware store. Tonight was Christmas Eve, and she had one last batch of Springerlees to deliver before the spring thaw.